yours, El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
It is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch on this show when we go places other talk shows wish they could, but they cannot. Later on tonight, Vernon Dozier, the high school educator, the teacher who was with us last evening, has asked for an opportunity to talk to the father of the young lady who took great exception to his opinions on George Zimmerman in the social studies class there at Belmar Academy. And he will do just that. We're going to have Brett Buford on, the father of Karen Buford, and the teacher and the parent will go at it. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. We're online at philhendryshow.com. That is our live streaming video of our show, the video cast we call Phil TV. You can get a backstage pass and watch that. Thousands of hours of archive material is there as well. And speaking of things that, well, not speaking of, but introducing the topic of things that are free, we have a podcast coming up, a free podcast, a Phil Hendry podcast very soon. 877-876-PHIL. Coming up toward the beginning of May, and forgive me, I don't have the exact date, but it nonetheless is a moment. I think it might even be May 1st. It is a momentous day. It is the day that Osama bin Laden was neutralized, killed, if you will, terminated with extreme prejudice by members of the United States Navy, specifically Navy SEAL Team 6. This was the more I read about this, and I don't know if how much you guys have read, but the more you read about this operation, you got to sort of be impressed a little bit with Obama, because not that you wouldn't be impressed with him otherwise, but maybe even a little bit more, because here's the thing: he had Robert Gates against the idea, Joe Biden against the idea. People were weighing in for a surgical missile strike of some kind. People were weighing in for some kind of an action that would force the people out of the compound. Like, believe it or not, they were thinking of stink bombs, things like that, to force everybody out of the compound and take everyone prisoner and not kill anyone. And there were a myriad of plans that were presented to the president, and it was he. And he alone that said, no, we're not doing any surgical strike. We're not doing any stink bombs. We're not doing this. We will go with the Navy SEAL plan. So I think there's some people that may think, you know, Obama, you know, is always Mr. Liberal, ultra careful, anti-military kind of a guy. Not necessarily the case. Bobby Dooley is joining us here on the line from the Western States Homeowners Association. A member of Angels on Our Shoulders, which was a big group supporting the candidacy of President Obama. And joining us now as we look toward the first anniversary of this particular day when bin Laden was taken out. Bobby, you know, as a supporter of President Obama's, obviously you're very happy. I guess as an American, we can all look at this anniversary as a good thing.
Oh, I think so, Phil. There's no question that as a supporter of Barack Obama, I was hopeful that a new president, a Democratic president, a progressive president, would roll back the role of the military in U.S. foreign policy. I was hopeful that we would not have to put men in harm's way, or men or women in harm's way. Although, I as a member of Angels on Our Shoulders, I think it's important to be clear. I think clarity is very important. And honesty, and so when I say that we're putting men in harm's way, we really are putting men in harm's way.
But we have women in the military.
We do, but I don't think it's honest. It's not in keeping with the policy of our group to say men and women in harm's way, because it really isn't. But that's beside the point. The point that I'm trying to make is it is a proud day, and there's nothing really the Republicans can do about it. They're angry. They're upset. They have been making statements about how President Obama should not be using the killing of bin Laden in any political way.
I think that they were saying, Republicans in the story that I've got here, and yeah, it's from Fox News,
Well, right there, it's you're going to have some bias.
But nonetheless, Republicans fired back Friday after President Obama's campaign released a web video touting the president, okaying the bin Laden raid and suggesting Mitt Romney would not have greenlit the historic mission if he were commander-in-chief. In a statement circulated Friday evening by the Republican National Committee, Senator John McCain said that it diminishes the memory of September the 11th and the killing of Osama bin Laden by turning it into a cheap political ad. Obama's Republican rival in the 2008 presidential campaign called it shameless and pathetic.
I think that's going to be expected from John McCain, and I think it's going to be expected from the Republicans to take any just facing the reality of what was done when it had to be done, and someone had to do it, and they had to get in and they had to do the very tough work of going in and killing Osama bin Laden. It was President Obama that, as they say in the military, he's the one that pulled the trigger on this deal. And I think it's a little, it's not very becoming, I don't think, of the former Republican presidential candidate to start to, sort of beat his fists on the wall and kick his feet and sort of wiggle around in the high chair crying.
The high chair. I mean, do you think he's being childish?
Well, it sounds a little bit like, believe me, I'm a mother, and when I hear someone sort of scrunching their face up and crying and wah, that is really what we're hearing from Republicans. And I think it makes them look bad. I think that, to be perfectly honest with you, I think it makes them... it makes them look bad, and it also you sort of enjoy it a little bit, seeing just how petty they can get.
Bobby Dooley with us here from Angels on Our Shoulders, a group of people that supported very much the candidacy of President Obama in 2008 and do in 2011 or 2012, and you know, all hail President Obama is your message as we lead up to the first anniversary of the death of bin Laden.
Well, I think he's the one that gets the credit. There's no way that you can't just acknowledge and accept that it was Barack Obama, and I'm not going to apologize for that slip.
Well, the people do it though, and it is kind of an embarrassing slip, you know.
Well, no, it isn't. I mean, I've heard too many people apologize. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. You know, I made a mistake. So, you know, people are going to have to live with it. I think that this was an operation planned by Barack Obama, and...
It's not that difficult. The difference between the two names is not that. But Barack Obama is our president, Osama bin Laden.
I understand that, but I don't want to give people all this, you know, ammunition for going, oh, ha-ha, you know, because what we have leading up to the anniversary of the killing of... Osama bin Laden, there's a lot of hurt feelings, and a lot of your Republicans are going to get, they're going to get ugly and say things that maybe they don't mean, and we just want them to know that we're here, we're on guard for it, and you can't get away with it. President Obama is the one that pulled the trigger on this. He's the one, as you said, Phil, he's the one that greenlit the SEAL operation. And the other ones, you know, that they wanted to do.
The other ideas that they had.
You said that they wanted to do a missile strike.
Yeah, the other ideas they had was a missile strike, and there were some other limited, more limited and more long range or more technologic ideas they had for taking out this man. Joe Biden was against the operation, and Robert Gates, and both of them felt that it was going to fail. They thought, especially Gates, felt that it had a very high percentage. It was too high a percentage. I don't know what you call it. It had too much of a percentage of failure built into it, or something.
Well, not built into it.
Well, yeah, I know. I don't know how those guys say these things, but I'm drawing a blank.
Well, it had a very high percentage of negatives, I think you could say.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Ms. Dooley. A high percentage of negatives. He thought, Gates thought, that they stood to lose people, meaning SEALs, and they stood to, there was a very good chance that bin Laden wouldn't be there, you know?
Well, this is why, you know, Barack Obama's president of the United States. This is why he's president. When you're president, and the vice president is worried, and the secretary of defense is worried, and this person's worried, and that person, and everybody's worried, and everyone's saying, no, 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 no. When you're the president of the United States, you have to think more clearly and see more clearly than anyone else. And Barack Obama, I think, you know, I just think it's a really embarrassing, this is going to be a very embarrassing couple of weeks for the Republicans. Because Barack Obama showed a clarity of thought, a commitment to, you know, the neutralizations of the, you know, the enemy combatant, which in this case was Osama, you know, bin Laden. And so the neutralization is what I was looking for, is what they do when they kill.
Yeah, there's a lot of fancy words. They killed him.
Yeah, they killed him, but it was not, you don't go, oh, I'm going to go kill him. You say, there's going to be a neutralization, or I got to, you know, I have to, what did you say about being prejudiced?
It's a line from Apocalypse Now, you know, terminate with extreme...
terminate with extreme prejudice, exactly. And my husband, Steve, was telling me that, right, Steve?
Yeah, well, they'll terminate with extreme prejudice, but they do. And Republicans didn't do it. Republicans never do it.
Well, but that's what they did. And this is a call that a president makes. And this is why so many of us were proud of President Obama on that day and will be again on the first anniversary. And this is why the Republicans are sort of rocking their high chairs back and forth. And I'm sorry to use that term, Phil.
Well, I think it's a little bit, it's a baiting term, and it may not be applicable when you say rocking their high chairs back and forth. You know,
I'm telling you, I'm a mother, and I've seen it, and I think they're being a little bit childish with this.
All right, Bobby Dooley with us here as we talk about the first anniversary of the killing of Osama bin Laden, President Obama using the news and using his administration's decision to kill Obama in the way, or kill bin Laden the way that they did, being used for a campaign ad. And the Republicans have reacted very negatively. Bobby Dooley is with us saying that the Republicans, you know, they just have to suck on it. There's nothing they can do about it. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. We'll take your phone calls for Bobby Dooley from Angels on Our Shoulders as we talk about the first anniversary of Osama bin Laden being killed by the U.S. Navy SEALs. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Bobby and Steve Dooley with me here. Ms. Dooley was the chairman of Angels on Our Shoulders, which is still a active group supporting President Obama in his reelection efforts as you guys were active during 2008. You wanted to mention this Marine Corps story?
Yes. There is a Marine that has been discharged from the Marine Corps for criticizing President Obama on Facebook. I think that is very unusual. The first year anniversary of President Obama making the courageous call to go in and take out Osama bin Laden. And now a Marine is on Facebook criticizing the president. I really have to ask myself, who's putting him up to that? Because I don't think a soldier, especially in the Marines, is going to make comments about the commander-in-chief in that kind of context unless he's being paid or otherwise is being, lured into it. I just think it's the timing is really weird. And so it's just one more dirty trick, I think, on the part of the Republicans that isn't going to win.
Now, what about the idea of politicizing this at all? When they said that President Obama used this in a campaign pitch, he was politicizing it, and now you're on and you're bashing the Republicans.
Well, they were bashing him. You know.
Yeah, but they were bashing him for using the event as a some kind of a political springboard. You know, what about that?
What's wrong with the president pointing out the very positive steps that he's taken? You know, this was a man, President Obama, that was criticized by people as being, he probably would be anti-military. I know that I was not, I wasn't really expecting him to be as, you know, pro-military as he is. So, and a lot of people said that, you know, his lack of experience there was going to be a disaster. And, you know, they said that he hadn't been on that that committee for Afghanistan. And there was a lot of things they said about him, and it all proved to be wrong. And meanwhile, the Republicans, you know, they didn't kill Osama bin Laden. Barack Obama did. So I just think that they've got to sit there and they have to accept it and not say anything. And I think they're coming out and saying the things they did say really, you know, was, I thought just, I can't help but use the comparison. They reminded me of a baby rocking his, you know, his high chair back and forth.
Yeah, they're just all screaming.
They're just all screaming and stuff. And I thought it was, I just didn't think it was anything that made them look good. And I, you know, if I was a Republican, I wouldn't know what to say either.
Well, I can tell you that a lot of Republicans will say the following. They'll say that...
Well, are you going to say that, you know, that this was part of...
Let me finish, okay? They're going to say that the Republican administration of Bush...
Yeah, you're going to say that they're going to take credit for it.
Well, a lot of what went into planning this...
That, well, yeah, a lot of what went there, that was way back 2008, okay?
Well, I'm sorry, sir?
That was back 2008. They got it in 2011. That's 3 years into Obama, so a lot of that didn't do it.
A lot of the surveillance work that they were doing was during the Obama administration. So you really can't even give President Bush that much credit. You can give him this much credit. You could say that he was the guy that said, "Oh, we got to go get it. You know, we got to go get Bin Laden."
Well, that really isn't, you know, the whole story, because the work that was done on beginning to track this guy commenced with the Bush administration. There was a mention today in an article I read that there were four pillars, so to speak, that they built their Bin Laden hunt on. And one of them had to do, I think, with family. Another had to do with money. Another had to do with the courier. And I believe that that was itself that CIA analyst that came up with these four pillars, whose name is not being released by the CIA. I think that was during Bush's administration.
But you don't know for sure.
Yeah, you know that. You know for sure whether or not that was a Bush or was Bin Laden.
I don't know for sure, but I mean, look, there was 4 years of this during the, 7 years of this during the Bush administration and 3 years of it during the Obama administration. Well, I just have to think that there'd be a higher, not a higher percentage, but at least a significant contribution by the Bush era CIA. Not that there's any difference, you know.
What do you mean by that?
What do I mean by that? I mean, it's essentially the same workforce of the CIA. Although we do have a different director.
Yeah, right there. That's right there.
They have Leon, I forget his name, Leon Panetta.
But that's a different director, and it may mean differences in terms of, emphasis on this over that, or perhaps they're going to, hire more people or maybe fire some people. I don't know, but it's the same people that are working in those cubicles over there at the CIA looking at this data.
That's right. You think it's the same people on
What about the people in the safe house? That's what we want to know about, the safe house. And I don't know if you're familiar with these terms or not.
Yeah, I know what a safe house is. Yes, I am.
Okay, you know what a safe house is? When they neutralize.
When they neutralize what?
The safe house.
What do you mean they neutralize the safe house? They neutralize a guy
Yeah, that's what I mean. From the safe house.
All right. Hold on for a minute, because we're getting into some strange, I don't know, 877-876-7445, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show on who gets the credit for killing Osama bin Laden. Bobby and Steve Dooley are saying, Republicans, just shut up and suck on it, because this is Obama's party. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We'll be right back.
I like how you put that. It's Obama's party.
Phil Hendry.
Keep doing that.
This is the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
What we're going to do?
The parade.
Well, I think some kind of a parade should be had for President. President Obama is at least honored in some kind of military parade as the man who, you know, really had the guts. I think more than anything else. Can you turn that down, please? Yeah, turn it down a little bit. I think it's President Obama that had the guts to say, you know what? All of you little old ladies in here, and I know he didn't say that, but.
Well, who's the little old lady that you're talking about?
Well, I think that Gates and Biden both said, oh, you know, we're worried, we're nervous. And I think that at some point, and you saw President Obama, they also said to him, you shouldn't do that dinner, that state dinner, the night before. And he basically said to them, you know, all of you little old women, you go and tend to your knitting.
Yeah, but they had to man up.
And I mean, he manned up. And next stop, there's a coffin being loaded onto an aircraft carrier. Thank you.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Let's get a call going here. We also have General Galen Shaw is going to be giving us a call momentarily. And we have Dave on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, Dave. You're on with Bobby and Steve Dooley.
I can't believe this guest of yours, the way she's talking. It's as if that President Bush never looked for Osama, that the military never looked for Osama, that the CIA never looked for him, but all of a sudden we have a president change, and President Obama's over there kicking up the sand and looking for him. No. Do you think that President Bush, if he had specific intel, wouldn't have gone on to get him? I know he would have. I flew missions over in Iraq during the first Gulf War. I worked in a command post, and I interfaced with people from Joint Chiefs of Staff. And that information is shared constantly, up and down, and we're always looking for high-value targets, and those targets were given out. If President Bush knew specifically where Osama was, I guarantee he would have gone after him. We didn't know specifically until President Obama was in office.
That's my point.
No, you're implying that President Bush never would have gone after him. He would have.
Well, what I'm saying is that Obama. Well, I think that President Obama is the one,
Let's get some boots on the ground. The military and the CIA did all the work for
boots
him.
Boots on the ground.
He's the one that said we're going to use the SEALs. And we're not going to.
Of course. Who else are you going to use?
We're not going to blow it up.
Who else are you going to use? And President Bush would have done the same thing had he known it.
He was being told by the others to use blow it up. And he said, let's use the snails. And that's what they did.
But we're not arguing. You're giving President Obama all the credit for getting him. The only reason he got him is because the military and the CIA found him finally. Mm-hmm. But that process was going on for years before President Obama became president. You can't give him
sole
credit for finding him and killing him.
Don't you think it's possible, though? Give
the credit to the military and the CIA that finally found all the leads. Yes, President Obama gave the order to go, just like any president would have done. The method
don't you think
is what you're trying to elevate to some
I think President Obama's the one. Now, look at it this way, Dave. President Obama's the one that said, you got a safe house? Yes, sir. We'll use it. You know, I think he kicked some asses.
I guarantee President Bush would have done the exact same thing.
Well, I think that President Bush, even President Bush said, oh, who cares about him? We're going to get Al Qaeda.
He never said who cares about him.
He said it doesn't matter, remember?
Well, he was being asked a question, Dave, if I could just jump in for a minute. The president was being asked a question about, what about Bin Laden? Yeah, he said, what about Bin Laden? And he said, we're going after Al Qaeda.
Right.
Osama
had gone underground, and he was no longer a factor. But I guarantee, having been in a bunker working with military planners, that hunt was still going on. Guaranteed. He wanted him so bad. No matter what he said, I know from the military bunkers what goes on.
Mm-hmm.
They were looking for him.
Well,
and all that information gets passed on and built on stacks of information until they finally have enough information, and you said the four pillars, they get tracked down to one focus point, and they know where he's at, and they go and get him. And any sane president would have done that.
I have to say, as a former member of the military, I have great respect for you. I am not really big on war and all that, but...
Well, nobody's big on war.
No, of course not.
Excuse me, Mr. Henry. I'm just saying that I'm not really all, my father wasn't in the military, so I don't have a military family. But I'm just saying that for a military, they call it operation, for a military operation, it was pretty exciting to see President Obama go, pull the trigger on it.
Yeah, okay. I mean, it's not a movie. It's not a Hollywood movie, and I think that that's what Bobby, Dave, I appreciate you, and I think you said it very, very well, and you're right. The CIA and defense intelligence, they never stop working. David, thank you for your call. 877-876-PHIL.
Phil, I just want to say one thing. I'm not being Hollywood movie about that.
That's kind of insulting to say that.
I'm not trying to insult anybody, but I think you're being a little Hollywood-esque. You go, oh, he pulled the trigger.
Do you know that?
What is the word neutralization? What is that about?
When they neutraled him. Or not neutraled him. What's the word?
They neutralized him. Let's say they killed him.
Yes, but they don't say that. That was all done by President Obama when he knew that there was only one man in that room. How did you put it, Steve?
There's only one man in that room, and everybody else, it was like they weren't even there. And the lights went down, and only one man on that room, and it was President Obama.
President Obama, not Obama. President Obama. And
you don't even know his name. Wow.
Yes, I do, Phil.
Wow. What?
Yes, I do, okay?
Well, Obama. Oh, excuse me. Let's get a phone call in here from General Galen Shaw, who is joining us from Northern California tonight. He's up in the up there in the Mendocino area of Northern California. General Shaw, how are you doing this evening, sir?
Phil, I'm doing well, but I joined with the other gentleman who called, who is a former flyer, I believe he said he was, in expressing frustration. With the woman you've got on the line right now, to hear her say it, you'd think that President Obama, and I think you put it very well, Phil, is Captain America, Spider-Man, and all the nonsense that you've read of so very frequently in recent weeks.
I don't think he's Spider-Man.
I want to finish this point that I'm going to make, because I've been waiting on hold, and I've been waiting and waiting and waiting. And my wife just had a tooth extraction today. She's in pain, and I've been ministering to her. And what is that, sir?
What are you doing to your wife?
I said I'm ministering to my wife who had a tooth extraction today. If that's okay with you, sir.
You're going to be a minister?
Ma'am, let me finish, if you wouldn't mind.
No, I just didn't understand.
Let me finish.
Okay, Bobby.
The young man who you spoke with here a moment ago was absolutely right. The intel is vetted and fed into what we call into the ops section of the Pentagon.
You're using a lot of those big words. That's what Republicans do. They use the big...
Sam, could I finish what I am saying? I'm not using big words. There's nothing big about the word ops. In fact, it is short for operations.
No, it's about psychological, isn't it?
Bobby, you know, you're talking to a retired general from the U.S. Army, you know...
I think I've got a little more information than the lady does. If you don't mind, I'd like to continue.
That's fine. Go ahead.
If you don't mind.
No, I don't mind at all.
Are we reserved the right to ask a question?
What did you say, sir?
We reserve the right to ask a question.
You reserve the right, and I would ask you to hold on to that right that you are reserving to ask the question until I am done with a series of comments that I'd like to make. Number one, the intel that comes in...
Steve, I'm sorry. I have to go to the bathroom. So I'm going to put my phone down, but I'm going to turn the radio on, and there's going to be a seven-second delay, if you're familiar with it, General.
Ma'am, if you want to be rude, and...
You have to go to the bathroom.
I've got to go.
My wife's got to go. He's trying to say she don't have the right.
If your wife needs to go to the bathroom, maybe it's something she should have thought about before she got on the phone and started talking all of this nonsense.
I have to go.
Well, what do you want me to do?
All right, well, go ahead, Ms. Dooley. I mean, we are coming up on a break.
I'm going to go up for the break, huh?
No, I gotta go now.
Well, what do you propose I do, Mr. Henry?
Hold on for a minute. We'll take a break. Steve Dooley is also with us. Steve, did you want to weigh in?
Well, I don't want to say anything, Bonnie. She wants to do the talking.
Okay, I'm back.
That was rather disgusting and not needed.
I heard that as well, and I didn't like it either.
You heard what?
I heard your expression there.
What expression did they do?
You went,
So I can't even express relief at finally getting rid of something I was holding all afternoon?
All right. You know, let's take a break.
Mr. Henry,
Let's just take a break, okay?
Well, what did I do wrong?
Hold on. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. The world-famous Phil Henry Show. General Galen Shaw will be back with Bobby Dooley. And Osama bin Laden, the death of Osama bin Laden, the one-year anniversary coming up May the 2nd. Bobby Dooley and Steve Dooley saying that this is President Obama's party. This is President Obama's doing. This is President Obama's victory. And we all hail our commander-in-chief. And the Republicans have to sit there and suck on it. We'll be right back. World-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth. He's our bitch. The Phil Henry Show. You're listening to the world famous Phil Henry Show.
Soldiers is supposed to be dirty, and so...
All right, hold on, General. Back here with General Galen Shaw on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Our number is 877-876-7445. General Shaw is also with Bobby Dooley here. And so, General, go ahead with your thought.
Well, I was saying something, Phil.
Excuse me, ma'am, but you have not let me finish one thought.
I was saying something, and...
What were you saying? In the depths of your ignorance, what were you saying?
How dare you?
Well,
the lady, sir, has been cutting me off ever since I tried to come on this program and express my opinion of the United States military's great job in neutralizing Osama bin Laden, as you like to say. They didn't neutral him. They neutralized him.
That was the word I was looking for.
All right. And soldiers do that all the time. Soldiers are dirty. Soldiers are hungry. Soldiers are tired, but they get the job done. And my guys, when I was in the Army, I used to say, my guys are hoo-ha guys. You know, they get after it. And
what do you mean by hoo-ha?
What is that?
What is what, ma'am?
All right, let's not get into that, okay? Let's just take a phone call here. Our number 877-876-PHIL, and this is Ken. Ken, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead.
I just want to stress that administrations overlap. And my biggest problem with Democrats currently is you want to take credit for killing Obama or killing Bin Laden? Knock your socks off. But then take credit for unemployment. Take credit for bad economy. Take credit for the $1 trillion deficit on a yearly basis that we have gained. Those are also all things that get to be hung on Mr. Obama's hat.
Well, that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous to hang a trillion. That wasn't him. But we know.
Oh, no. Yes, it was. He doesn't get credit for killing Bin Laden.
Well, no, it doesn't work like that. Osama Bin Laden, the order came directly from the president. He said, we go at midnight.
That was the order.
So was the $1 trillion a year deficit. That was
order from Obama as well. No one said, okay, make it a trillion.
He wanted
to make it $2.5 trillion, and the Republicans wouldn't let him. But you're right.
They did the whole thing too on it.
See, it doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that. One is not the same as the other.
Overlap. There was part of what Bush did that allowed Bin Laden to be neutralized.
Bush let him go out of Tora Bora. Hooba Booba. What was the name of the place?
Tora Bora.
Yeah, Bush let him get away. So he did his part.
What is this let him get away stuff? First of all, President Bush was going on the advice of people on the ground not to piss off the Afghan tribal commanders who wanted a piece of this operation and had to get, you know, they had to be political. They couldn't send more American troops into an area where they had Afghan commanders who were starting to get a little bit pissed off over the fact that they weren't being cut in.
What are you talking about?
Mr. Hendry is absolutely correct. The Afghan tribal leaders and commanders were causing a problem which kept the U.S. from sending more troops into Tora Bora.
All right, listen, Ken, thank you for your call.
Ken, I just think it really doesn't work like that, you know? You got to have... you have to have the peas and the rice, isn't that it?
Yeah, if you got to have peas and rice, you got to have the peas and the rice.
Exactly.
All right, 877, whatever that means.
You don't know what that means.
No, that's a bunch of homespun. That's a bunch of horse nuggets. I can tell you that. And you know what I mean by horse nugget, don't you? I mean horse manure.
Oh, well, I didn't get that. Wow.
Young lady, you can be...
But what's the point of being sarcastic?
Well, I have been attacked over and over since I've been on this program. And
we're getting asking questions. Let me go to a phone call here. I got Ruth hanging on the line here. Ruth, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Bobby Dooley.
Okay. Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I agree with the young lady. You're blaming
President Obama
for this and that and the other. Mm-hmm. What about the war? Why were we there? I guess you're blaming him also for the war.
I am not blaming President Obama for the war.
Not you. I'm talking about this Phil and the people he have calling in. I thought this was the Fox show.
I mean, General Shaw
calling in, talking about the
general,
president. They don't.
Let's get General Shaw in here. General Shaw, what did you say?
I'm a retired Army general, man, but I can tell you that I have nothing but respect for our commanders in chief. But I am telling you as well. The order to send the steels or whatever they're called, because I've been retired for long. What are they called again?
Seals.
The seals, to send the seals in and to execute order AB, and that was to neutralize Geronimo, bring out what was left of him. That was indeed given by President Obama. There's no question at all. Now, when we look at the intel, as they say, DIA, CIA, or the State Department intel, this was collected certainly as well during the Bush years, and I dare say some of it collected in the Clinton years. And
What do you mean the Clinton years?
Well, well, that was before 2001, so you're right. But they did, this guy Bin Laden, well, you know, I don't have all my facts. I've been retired for about 10 years now. I don't even know what the name of the lady that I'm talking to. What's your name, Miss Ruth?
Ruth.
Okay, Ruth. What was the name of the guys that killed him?
SEALs.
Oh, all right. Now, am I a fan of President Bush? Yes, I am. Do I think President Obama sort of stumbles his way through life? Yes, I do.
No.
Does that mean I don't respect him? What do you mean, no?
You don't think President Bush stumbled through life? They stole the election?
I think President Bush very smartly...
Brother and all of them stole the election.
I think President Bush very smartly strode into each day. I think President Obama...
He admitted himself that he was a C student. Anybody can be president because he was a C student. To me, that is a terrible message to send out to the young people.
He was a C student. I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, well, he's the one who told it.
That's the first time hearing of that.
Yeah, well,
The president said he was a C student. You didn't hear that?
No, I never. Yeah. I known that.
President Bush said he was a C student.
What about Clinton? He was
a Rhodes Scholar at Oxford.
We're not talking what?
Phil Hendry.
Where's the lady?
Shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
The world-famous Phil Hendry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Thank you, General Galen Shaw, and the Dooleys as well for joining us last hour. We're online at philhendryshow.com. You can watch Phil TV in HD. This is a full-color, high-definition picture of our studio. You also see the roiling surf of the El Pacifico behind me. We have three basic camera angles and more, and a lot of other little extra goodies we do with our video cast. Join us for the video cast with a backstage pass at philhendryshow.com. Now, last night, Vernon Dozier, who is an educator at Belmar Academy, was on the line with us, and we were discussing the George Zimmerman case. Mr. Dozier is not only a social studies teacher at Belmar, he is as well a member of their board. He's the head varsity football coach. He wears a lot of hats, and you can well imagine how busy a guy like that is. He's joining us tonight again because what happened essentially was this. He had given an opinion in his social studies class about the George Zimmerman Defense Fund. George Zimmerman, the man accused of killing Trayvon Martin in that neighborhood watch gone awry shooting there in Sanford, Florida. There is a defense fund for George Zimmerman, and it was Mr. Dozier's opinion that anybody that contributed money to it was stupid. And then Vernon's on the line with us here from Glendale. Then a young lady took exception to that, right?
That is correct, Billy. A young woman by the name of Karen Buford, who is in my class, gone home to her father and told her father what I'd said. And I told you last night, and I continue to tell you, that there are some things that are said in the classroom that are no one's business. But as the saying goes, up, you know, if you ever saw that movie Thunderbolt and Lightfoot, where Jeff Bridges, they're standing on a creek, there's a very babbling creek that he's standing. He says, up here, people's business is nobody but their own. Well, that's the same thing in my social studies class. You know, that's my business. And when I'm talking to my students about different things having to do with the daily topics of the day, there are things naturally they're going to share with their parents. And there's some stuff that I... when I'm giving an opinion, I don't think they're going to run home and squeal. I don't want to say squeal because...
you really call it squealing when the kids are talking to their own parents?
No, I wouldn't characterize it like that, but I do feel a little betrayed. And so, make a long story short, she went and told this guy, this Brett Buford, and I talked to him at a parent-teacher conference, and we had an exchange where, you know, I said, anybody that contributes money to the George Zimmerman Defense Fund is stupid. And he said, well, maybe I think you know, you sound stupid. And I said, well, stupid is as stupid does. I was quoting the Forrest Gump movie. I wasn't trying to show, you know, I think I got in a good line there. Stupid is as stupid does. And he turned around, took two steps back, and then looked back at me and said, run, Forrest. And the message was delivered loud and clear. In that instant, both of us were frozen in time. And I realized that he was calling me mentally deficient. He was calling me a mental defective. And, you know, if you ever saw that Cuckoo, remember the movie The Cuckoo, or how that thing would go? The Cuckoo, yeah, with Jack Nicholson.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, that's it. He said the mental defectives in formation. Okay. And it's almost like it was, that's what Brett was doing, just going the mental defective right over here. So I just said, Dan, you know, that's it. I felt like there's nothing I can do. There's nowhere I can go. There's no one I can talk to. There's my wife is not going to understand anything that I say because she doesn't care. And I'm not, you know, God bless my wife. I love her very much. She's much younger than me, and she doesn't care what I do for a living as long as I keep the money coming in. And I don't find that either. That's the way women are. That's the way women are. If you want to come home at night to something quality, okay, then you better keep the money coming in.
And look, I don't want to talk, Vernon, about your marriage, okay?
I'm not. Well, I apologize, but I was trying to make a point.
And well, what is the point?
Mr. Hendry, I didn't come on your program again tonight to once again be on the defensive, okay? I'm just saying.
Well, you're talking about your. You're talking about marriage and women, and if you want to keep something quality at home, what's that got to do? I'm going to get Mr. Buford on the line here in a moment. I just wanted to make sure that we're on point, that's all.
Well, all right, sir, but you sound decidedly. Hold on, would you turn that down, please? The TV. You sound decidedly irritated. And
were you talking to your wife right there?
That's none of your business. That's none of your business. If that's the way you want to play it, we'll play it like that. I was talking to you about my wife, but you said, what's this got to do with anything? Now you're asking me, was I just talking to my wife? That's none of your business.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry, sir. I don't want to get into an argument.
All right. Well, then it was my wife.
Okay. Whatever. I mean, I'm not...
Mr. Henry, can we get something clear? I just...
No, but hold on. I got to finish this thought. I don't want to get into a lot of personal arguments about marriages or the definition of marriage. If you're telling me that you are not understood by people, that's the essential point of what you were saying.
I am telling you that I'm not understood when it comes to trying to communicate to my students, and so my students become my last line of communication. And if I can't talk to them, and I can't say something to them like anyone that puts money into George Zimmerman's pocket is an idiot. An idiot. And I say, and there's, I feel strongly, if I can't even say it to my students, who have I got? And what have I got? Now, you tell me. I said I can't talk to her. She's sitting there right now with a spoon shoved in a thing of ice cream. Now, I got to tell you something about my wife. She is all that and a bag of pork rinds. But I'll tell you something. In about 5 years, you hear I'm talking about you now. I said in 5 years, that ass. Well,
yeah, you know something? We're talking about education. We're talking about students. We're talking about parent-teacher organizations. I don't want to be talking about your wife's rear end. All right.
I apologize. I'm sorry. I wanted to tell her if she keeps eating that ice cream. That's
you can talk to her about that later. But I think this is the problem that we have when we talk to you and about some of the issues that come up with you, sir. You have this manner in the classroom that's going to rub a lot of parents the wrong way, and then we get sidetracked.
I'm not getting sidetracked. You don't understand.
You're telling me that you have no one to express opinions to, and so you express them to your students. Fair enough. But then you don't want them to go back to their parents and say anything to their parents.
I don't want them to go back to their parents and squeal like so many guys that I came up with. You know, the minute somebody got caught with a gun or they got caught with a car that wasn't theirs, something, they start, well, now I'm telling you too much of a...
Yeah, everything you say to me, man, about your marriage, your upbringing, you're telling me now what? You got in trouble with the police?
I didn't say that at all.
Well, you're talking about guys that squealed when they got caught with a gun?
A guy? You don't know people that... What I'm going to say is this.
Why don't we get off of these topics? Because here, Mr. Buford, is he up?
Yeah, I got Brett Buford here. Come up on line two.
Fine, bud. I can see the line blinking. I just wanted to know if that's him. We're going to talk with you and to Mr. Buford here when we come back from the break. And I don't think we need to. I don't want to limit what the conversation is going to be. But didn't you say you wanted a chance to talk to him?
I wanted a chance to talk to him man to man and tell him about what it's like for me, okay? Just talk about me for a change. I talk about students. I talk to parents. I talk to everyone. When do I get a chance to talk about me?
And I don't know if it's about you as a teacher.
Well, there you go. You see, everywhere I go, I get cut off. I'm looking at her right now. She's on the couch. She's not even paying attention to me. I could talk this loud. I'm talking this loud right now. Becky? See, she doesn't even hear me. She's got a spoon shoved so far into that moose track, or what do you call that? Moose's tracks. And you know what moose tracks, the ice cream, have you ever had that?
Yeah, I like it.
You like it? It's like they have balls. You're supposed to be imagining that you're digging into a pile of moose turd. That's what it is.
And no, you're not. No, you're not.
Well, why do they call it moose tracks then? Because you're every now and again you come across a moose nugget, something that fell out of a moose's.
Okay, hold the line here.
I'm 15 minutes into your...
Hold the line here. We'll be right back. Vernon Dozier, he's not going to get very far in this show. He's wound up again, man. Well, we'll get Mr. Buford on. They had a dispute, parent and teacher, and they'll talk it out, hopefully, here on the Phil Henry Show. I don't know why they call it Moose Tracks. All I can tell you is it's damn good ice cream. I don't eat it these days, but maybe someday, way in the future... when I get this weight of mine down to about 200 even, baby, then we'll get back into the moose tracks. But that's going to be a long way off. We'll be right back here, the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Why do they call it moose tracks? Why can't you answer that?
World-famous Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here with Vernon Dozier, and we got Mr. Brett Buford on the line. Mr. Buford is the father of Karen, and Karen Buford was the one who had heard the comments about George Zimmerman in Vernon Dozier's class, went home and talked to her father, who is on the line with us now. Where does your family live, sir?
We live in Glendale.
You live in Glendale, okay. And can you tell me when you were at home and your daughter, where did she tell you about this? At the dinner table?
Yeah, you know, in the morning, Karen will, or not in the morning or the evening, the kids will talk to us about how their class went, you know, and we'll talk to them about their classes and their grades and this kind of thing. And she mentioned that they'd had this discussion and this... in social studies, you know, with this Mr. Dozier, and I said to her that I actually had donated to this George Zimmerman Defense Fund.
So you had?
Oh, yes, sir.
And how?
Through PayPal.
Okay. And was this on his website?
Yes, sir, it was. And I, you know, gave money to PayPal, and I said to my daughter, you don't think your dad's stupid, do you? And she said... no, you know, my daughter and I are very close. She said, no, Daddy, and she felt bad for me. You know, I said, well, you don't feel bad for me. Feel bad for your teacher. And I said, but we're going to talk to him. Your mother and I are going to talk to him.
So you guys had the parent-teacher conference schedule.
Yes, sir.
All right. So Vernon Dozier is with us. Vernon?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Okay, Vernon, you know Mr. Buford.
Yeah, I know Brett. Brett, how are you doing?
I'm good, Mr. Dozier. How are you?
Well, I'm fine. I'm sorry that we had a little bit of static there. But, you know, I wanted to talk to you and explain to you my feelings on the issue, you know.
Well, I appreciate that very much. Thank you. And I apologize if I had offended you. You know, I called you Forrest Gump or whatever I said to you.
Well, you said run, Forrest. But I understand, and I know that I probably... I'm not trying to usurp your role as a father, okay?
All right.
I'm just saying that in the classroom, when I am given a social study lesson, I'm also encouraging the students to express their opinions. And then, of course, I express mine. Because...
Now, are you going to be doing all the talking here?
I'm sorry, say it again.
Are you going to be doing all the talking here? When...
But that's my understanding, because my understanding is I'm explaining something to you.
Well, I appreciate that, but...
Well, Mr. Buford would like to give his side, too.
Mr. Buford would like to give his side, too.
Yeah, I was told by the radio station.
I was told by Mr. Henry's staff that I would have the opportunity to explain the whole situation to you.
And I'm happy to hear your side, but I wanted to give you mine too, so we can have an understanding. You know.
No, Phil.
Well, what did you think that you were just going to give a lecture here?
I was going to straighten this guy out. That's all. And
I don't need any straightening out, sir, I can tell you.
Well, I think you do in some areas. That's all I'm, you know, see, look, this is like right out of a cartoon. So now we're arguing.
Yeah, okay, so let's not argue. Let's just let you give your side, and then Mr. Buford can give his. Can we do that? Can we hear both sides, and you guys can, you know, keep it down, not get angry?
All right, who goes?
No, you go, sir. That's fine. I'll listen to you.
All right. Let me go through it again. I came into the class, and I said, George Zimmerman, the man that killed this kid, has got a defense fund. And I said to my class, I said to them, what do you think about that? And they said, yeah, they said nah, they said a lot of stuff. I've been a teacher for 17 years, and I got kids every day, and they're in the class, and you don't remember one class runs into another, let me tell you. I don't remember. This is, all it is just a lot of la la. It's just a lot of noise. But you listen to them, you know, what you're doing is you're trying to encourage them to have an opinion. I said, so George Zimmerman, I said, well, let me tell you what I think. And this is a moment for me. And I told you, Mr. Buford, I told Mr. Henry, I'm telling his audience, this is a moment for me where no one seems to care. No one wants to listen to me, you know. And so I said, well, let me tell you what I think. This is what I think, my life. And this is the point in every classroom that I've ever had where the kids start throwing paper airplanes, okay? You see, are you with me on this, Phil?
And, okay, I mean, all right.
Well, this is where they start with the spitwads, and I'll say, here's what I think. I think, and spitwads, and this, and they're playing trash can basketball. They're playing grab ass. They're playing monkey in the middle. They're doing all of these.
Sir, why don't you have a little more control over the classroom, sir?
Sir, can I finish what I'm saying, though? I do have control over my classroom. But I'm telling you, I've had a lifelong problem with anybody, and I mean anybody. Anybody. Caring whether I live or die. Okay? Right now, I've got a wife sitting on this couch. And,
well, sir, I've heard your opinion about your wife. She's eating a Moose Tracks ice cream. She doesn't seem to be much interested in what you're saying. It doesn't mean she doesn't love you. You know,
I think I know my wife better than you. God Almighty, at least give me that. At least give me that. That I know my wife better than you.
All right, sir.
Vernon, can we get past your personal needs?
Who said that?
The host of the show, Mr. Henry.
Oh, I'm sorry, Phil. I'm sorry.
Can we get past your personal needs? Can we get to the meat of the matter here?
All right. So while I'm giving the kids my opinion and the spitwads are flying and the trash can basketball, monkey in the middle, Dharma for one, grab ass, ankle grab, crotch baseball.
What is all of this that you're talking about?
I've been trying to tell you, these are the games that these kids are going to play when they ignore you and don't care whether you're walking around breathing or you're lying there as cold as ice. It doesn't matter at all.
Well, sir, I hate to tell you that I'm not finished, Mr. Buford, so please hold on.
All right, sir.
So I gave my opinion, and when the class was done and I was finished talking, they all got up and left almost as if they didn't even know I was there. They just, you know, they left. And the next thing I hear is from your daughter, who said, I told my dad. All right, I'm sorry, I shouldn't.
Well, see, that's what I mean. You're making fun of my daughter. You're making a voice like you did right there.
All right, but I mean, she came into the classroom, and all right, I'm sorry.
Can't you just say what she said without characterizing it?
Well, I mean, I'm giving you what she said. She came in, and she goes, oh, Mr. Dozier, all right, I won't be a smartass, but she, Mr. Dozier, I told my dad, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I said, what? And he said, my dad contributes. I said, you know.
Well, you said to her, she said she, that you said to her, that's real disappointing. I'm sorry to hear your dad is such a numbskull.
I didn't say numbskull. I probably said something like douchebag, and I didn't even mean to say that.
Well, I think that's worse.
That's not worse than numbskull.
You called that, are you telling me, I just want to be clear here now. I'm the guy that needs some clarity. You're telling me you said to a student that her father was a douchebag.
You know something, Phil?
Is that what you said to this kid?
You know, son, let me just, Phil, you have a tendency to really, you really love the drama, don't you?
I love the drama. You're the guy who's been here talking about yourself and about how the girl made a voice and about the kids are throwing spit wads and nobody cares about you and your wife's on the couch. And have you ever had moose tracks? You know.
Oh, so now you're laughing, huh?
Well, I have to be honest with you, sir. It is pretty funny.
Oh, my God. Are the two of you, I want to be clear, are the two of you laughing?
Well, it's a little bit funny.
I laughed at the moose tracks.
Oh, my God. So I've been on this.
Hold on, and just try to, if you can, take a deep breath and just hang on, and we'll be right back with you. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. World famous, Phil Hendry Show. We'll be right back.
My God. My God. Why?
Phil Hendry.
Phil, the world famous Phil Hendry Show. Our news and information hour in about a half an hour. Right now, though, we are talking with Vernon Dozier and with Brett Buford, the father of Karen Buford, the young lady who was your class, Vernon, and heard your opinion. And we're getting sidetracked a little bit. Give me your opinion, Vernon, and then Mr. Buford, you respond to that, and then you give me your opinion, and Vernon can respond to that.
Are you going to do this? You're going to moderate like it's a
you know, I think you ought to let Phil. I think he's doing a good job. You let him let Phil, you know, kind of run things.
Okay, yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Buford. I just would tell you that I've been on the Phil Hendry Show, and I know how things work. And I'm just going to ask you, Phil, are you going to moderate it like a debate? That's all I wanted to say, but I couldn't get it out because Buford.
Well, all I was doing was jumping in with opinion. Oh, my God. Am I going to be able to finish a sentence around here?
You know what? I think what you need to do, Vernon, is just relax, okay? Okay? This is my plan, and I would like you gentlemen to follow it. You tell me your opinion. We'll hear what Mr. Buford, his reaction to that, and then Mr. Buford will give his opinion, and then your reaction to that. Can we do that?
Yeah, sure.
You know...
You know, you can't have an attitude like that in life. You have to, you know, kind of go with the punches.
Hey, what is this all of a sudden? Is this Garrison Keillor? I have to tell you.
No, I'm not Garrison Keillor. I come from Hibbing, Minnesota. Not Hibbing. I come from Minnesota, sir. I come from the Iron Range, and I grew up in the cities, and I moved my family to California. I'm not some hayseed. I'm not some backwoods guy. I understand how education works. I've raised a daughter and a son. And I've been happily married for 27 years. And I will tell you that I've got great interest in my daughter and how well she does. And you don't have to talk down to me either.
All right, fine. I mean, I just, you know, you're all, you know, with a boot. Just to me, it sounded real hazy.
Yeah, I know. You've made that very clear, sir.
All right, Vernon?
What are you going to do? You going to sit there and watch this guy as he mops the floor with me, or what are you going to do?
I'm going to moderate. He's not mopping the floor with you.
He bent me right over the hood of a car right there. You didn't see it? You witnessed it, and you didn't stop it. I didn't bend you over. I put you over the hood of a car, sir. I'm explaining how I raised my children. That's all. I'm telling you that I'm not some hayseed. Well, then you're not a hayseed, sir. You just sound like one. How about that? Okay, fine. I'll take that, sir. It doesn't matter to me. You can make all the fun you want. I'm talking about my daughter. Okay, so you're going to take the moral high road. Is that it? Yes, that's exactly the high road. That's the road you should take, too, as a teacher. Okay, Phil, he just bent me over another car. You know
what? Will you stop with the rape analogies? You two guys are talking. Now, if you want to do what I suggested, then there won't be the back and forth.
All I'm saying to you is, in the last 2 minutes, I've been trying to get some soap off of the tile, and every time I... This guy, have you been in jail, sir? That's none of your business. That's a very personal question. Well, I don't know if it's personal or not. You're a teacher. I'd love to know if you've been in jail. That's a personal question. Now, Phil, you wanted me to give an opinion about what?
About George Zimmerman. What do you think we've been talking about?
Fine. Anyone that gives money to George Zimmerman is an imbecile. I said it in the class. I'm saying it now. I don't mean anything personal by it, but if you give money to George Zimmerman, you're an ass. There's my opinion.
All right, I'll tell you that I did give money to George Zimmerman because I felt that the man had the right to a fair trial, especially in a very highly publicized case like this. And my daughter, she came home.
Okay, you're taking more time than I took. Don't you keep a clock on this? Or
You took the time that you wanted to take.
Oh, my God, and all I'm doing is asking for the rule.
You know what? I'm going to... I've about had enough of this, okay?
Mr. Henry, please don't... I want to give my opinion, at least. If he wants to sound like a baby...
I don't sound like a baby, sir. I wanted to give an opinion, and now he says he wants to stop.
I'm going to stop if I got to listen to you cry.
I'm not crying. I just want to... So anyway, Mr. Henry, I want to get my opinion, and this is it. I think the man's entitled to his opinion. Am I on the clock here or what?
Then say something.
In the last 10 minutes, I have stood here. I have been tied to a shower faucet. As this man here...
Boy, you just can't get off that, can you?
Can I finish, please?
You guys on a rape analogy again.
No. I'm saying, were my hands free, I would have defended myself, but Mr. Henry and you both tied my hands to the shower faucet, and then you basically opened the emergency door, the back door, and in strides that guy, Jerry, what's his face, from Penn State. Now, how do you think that would make me feel? And that's exactly what you guys did. That's exactly what you guys did.
Because I didn't interrupt this guy while he was scoring points in his response to you? You call that having your hands tied to a shower, and you bring up that Penn State thing? You got to be crazy. You got to be more than crazy.
That's sick. Why am I crazy?
What has that got to do with any of that, man? You are here, an adult man. You can defend yourself. Now, you said what you said about George Zimmerman. People are stupid. Here's a man who's got a daughter in your class. She told her father. He came and he confronted you. Now we're in the classroom. I want to get to that point where the two of you guys are squaring off.
All right. I said to this guy that anyone that gives money to George Zimmerman is a blithering imbecile. And he said to me, well, you go ahead, tell him what you said.
Yeah, then I said to him, I said, well, then maybe I think your opinion, the opinion comes from a blithering imbecile.
Right, and then I said to him, no, you didn't, you said it's stupid.
No, I said it comes from a blithering imbecile.
Well, then I said stupid is as stupid does.
Yeah, and that's what I said, that's got nothing, I said, it doesn't make any sense for you to say that when I said blithering imbecile.
No, you didn't. Because I remember feeling good that I'd scored one. And you're telling me that, no, you didn't?
you're not remembering it properly. You said the word stupid. That's why I came back with stupid is as stupid does.
All right, okay, I'll give it to you. It's not that big a deal to me.
Well, no, I want the record to be clear. You used the word stupid, didn't you?
I said that you, I repeated what you said. You said blithering imbecile. I said blithering imbecile.
No, you didn't. You used the word stupid. See, this is what's unfair about it.
God, this is what he did the other night, too.
What did he do, cry?
Well, it looked like he was going to...
Stop crying. I'm trying to tell you. So, then he turned around and he went like you were going out.
Yeah, I turned and I went, and it's something that I do. It's like a psychological power play. I turned, I walked to the door, then I leaned against the door jamb.
That's right.
And I said, run, Forrest. And that's when he looked like he had... You looked like you had an accident in your pants.
No, I did. Yeah, no, I didn't. I admit I was stunned.
You looked like you dropped one.
I admit I was stunned, but I gathered myself. I saw you with that half smile, and that's when I figured you'd scored one. And he walked outside, and it had been a misting night. It had been raining, and so there was moisture on the glass, and he wrote, me one, you nothing, and strolled away. And I went back out and tried to change it to me one, you one, because I thought at worst I tied him. And
I don't. What does that mean, me one, you one?
Well, because, no, I said me one, you nothing, because when I said run for us, and he looked like he dropped the load, I figured I'd won that round.
Are you two adult men are talking to me like this?
What is that supposed to mean?
I'll tell you what it means. You two guys are adults. And you're talking about the well-being of a young student, this man's daughter, and you two jackasses are going, me one, you nothing?
Well, I don't understand what's so funny about that.
I don't either. What we were doing, Mr. Henry...
What you guys were doing was you were playing mind games with each other with Forrest Gump insults. Then you, Mr. Buford, who up to this point I thought was probably making the better of the points, you walk outside and you write, me one, you nothing.
Because I scored. I thought I scored.
I went out. No, but I went outside and I made it 1-1.
Yeah, I know, and I was upset with that.
But what difference does any of this make when you're talking about his daughter?
Talking about his daughter? What?
What do you mean he's talking about my daughter?
Is she a student?
Oh, yes. It means that, you know.
I think both of you guys ought to be ashamed of yourselves. I think both of you guys, teacher and father, spent more time puffing your chests out and trying to be big shots.
Mr. Henry, you know.
Hold on. I think you, Vernon, have got a psychological problem.
That's not news. You're always saying that to me.
Well, you do, man. You do. You've almost been in tears tonight. Last night, you sounded like you're going to have a stroke. And meanwhile, your wife's TV is still turned up.
I've tried to tell her to turn it down, and she won't.
Yeah, that's because you seem to not have... You don't have any control anywhere, man.
No one... Thank you. Now you're finally seeing it. No one listens to me.
Well, I don't blame them not listening to you. There's not a whole lot to listen to.
Well, you know what? That may be a good point. You're just not a very assertive guy, and you're certainly not very interesting.
So my wife doesn't... Turn the TV down, Becky. Turn it down, not up.
She probably turned it up to drown you out.
I was going to say, that's probably why she did it.
Thank you very much, both of you.
Wait. I to leave me twisted in the breeze. My students were listening tonight. Other parents are listening tonight.
Well, you lose. You know, I win. You lose. Me one, you nothing.
No, not me. No, me one. Me, you. Me one, you won.
I know, I won.
No, me one, numeral one. I would like Mr. Henry to weigh in. Don't you think that...
No, I'm not weighing in on anything. Thank you very much and good night. There's one kid there who's got a moron for a father, an idiot for a teacher. Good luck to you, kid, wherever you are. Well, I guess she's a senior. She'll be graduating, so, you know. The world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL. We'll be right back.
Truth. Right, keep him on the line or what?
No.
The Phil Henry Show.
Me one, you...
No, me one, you... you.
world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL on the line. Let's see. Go down to the phone call, bud.
Yeah, line one.
All right, we have Ermine on the phone. Ermine, is that you?
Listening to your show tonight, this is a very interesting conversation, but I think it's out of control to listen to this man who is the teacher speaking the way he's speaking. I've been a teacher myself, and I've taught at the elementary level, and I've taught small children, but I've never heard anyone having a difficult time with an opinion to give, and then give it to a parent and not have the parent be heard. And I'm not quite understanding what the man's saying.
Yeah, this is Vernon Doyce. Is this Ermine?
Yeah.
Ermine, I'm simply saying.
And this Brent Buford too, Ermine. I just wanted to say I'm here too.
Okay, that's good. I'm here to listen to both of you gentlemen.
All right. Can I say what I want to say? Are you gonna?
No, you go ahead and say what you want to say, you know, but I'm just saying you have to let me.
I'm going to let you say what you want to say. I'm going to let you say what you want to say. Okay?
Yeah.
Ermine, I came into the classroom that day, and I wanted to talk about a George Zimmerman case that has been in the U.S. headlines about a guy who's driving around in his neighborhood, and he saw a guy, and he stopped, and he said, "What's going on?" And then he decided to pull a gun and blow the guy away. Now, I don't know what country you're from, but in America, you don't get to do that. Now, this guy, Mr. Buford, is coming on here and telling me, and he told his daughter that he gave money to Zimmerman's defense fund. That's fine. But when I say that I think anyone that gives money to the Zimmerman defense fund has got a problem, I am confronted by the daughter, the father, and I don't have anyone who hears me.
Okay. I'm listening to you.
No one listens to me.
I think you made your point, sir.
No one listens. No, I haven't made my point. I must say, no one listens to me.
Hey, your name Vernon, right?
What's that?
Your name Vernon, correct?
Yeah, my name's Vernon.
All right, Vernon, I'm listening to you, and you have opinion on that George Zimmerman, you give money to the George Zimmerman fund, you're stupid, you know? But that man there, he gave money, so he's going to have a different opinion.
But you don't understand.
That was my point, too.
No, neither one of you guys understands. Neither one of you guys understands. My opinion counts because I'm the teacher. The teacher. Now, I know Mr. Henry's going to have an exception to, he's going to have a conniption because I'm trying to be emphatic because you got to listen.
I'm listening to you. I know you're the teacher of the student, but why are you angry?
I'm not angry. I want to. Oh, God.
Why does someone?
Why don't you calm down, okay? Why don't you calm down? Go ahead and say what you're going to say.
You know, don't tell me you're from Minnesota. You're a Canadian. Okay?
I'm not a Canadian. I come from Minnesota. I'm an American citizen.
Well, where are you? What are you?
Are you talking to me?
Yes.
I'm from Guatemala.
Guatemala. I got to go. Okay. I'm the teacher, so I get to say what I want to say. I get to say what I want to say.
What about me? I'm the father. Don't I have an opinion, too?
You got your opinion in your house. But when your daughter comes in to my classroom and she says, "Guess what? My father thinks this," and I say to her, "Well, I don't care. I don't care what your father does. I don't care whether your father flips or falls in it. I don't care whether your father walks out of the house, gets into the car, and goes to work, or whether he walks out of the house, gets into the car, and drives, and yes, I said this, and drives to a whore house. And yes, I said that."
You said that to a young student?
Oh, my God. Hey, don't be dramatic. This is a senior in high school.
I had no idea you said that to my daughter. If I'd been there, I heard that,
I would have busted your nose.
Hey, you think so, huh? You think you really? So you want to get some? Come on, get some.
And no, no, there's that come on, get some and none of that stuff. Grow the hell up.
What do you mean grow up? He just said he wanted to bust my nose.
You're talking that way to his daughter?
I said it for a reason. I said it for a reason. I didn't say it to say that her father doesn't have balls. I said it didn't matter to me what her father thought of me in my classroom because only I, and only I alone, get to have an opinion in my classroom. Only me.
Well, I mean, my opinion is this. I think this man is right if to say...
Yeah, see, I'm right. I'm right.
Well, why don't you let him finish, because he's not finished what he's going to say. Oh, hold on, yeah. I think the man's right to the opinion that he is the one who's giving the lesson, but certainly the girl is the one who gets to come to the classroom, you know, and say what her father thought.
Why? I don't understand. What difference does it make to me? And that's why I said what I said. You know, she comes in, Mr. Dozier, my daddy, and okay, I'm sorry I'm making fun, but that's what it sounds like to me. You got to understand, when these kids come in from home, and they always sound the same. My daddy.
Are you kidding me? Every single kid?
Every one of them. It sounds exactly the same. They come in. And you never even hear what they're saying, because all it is a lot of whine. It's just... That's all you hear. And she came in, and I, you know, by some miracle of God, I heard what your daughter said, sir. Okay?
Well, I guess that makes me a real lucky guy, huh?
Yes, sir. As a matter of fact, it does. And I heard her, and she goes, Mr. Dozier, my father gave money to Jenny. And I made out George Zimmerman. Started to go just... But I made out George Zimmerman. And
oh, will you get real?
What do you mean, get real?
I'll knock it off with a... You can hear what these kids are saying fine. And she said her father gave her the George Zimmerman fund.
Yeah, and I said it doesn't make any... What bearing does that have on anything? I said, what possible bearing? Does your father... I said, and that's what I said. Your dad could walk out the door and drive his car directly to the Cherry Blossom Ranch, 15 miles outside of Las Vegas, and I've still got their card. Okay?
You know what, sir? That just about says it all about you.
Oh, give me a... Are you telling me...
All right, thanks a lot, Vernon.
Well, you can't hang up.
I just did. That's the second night in a row. Well, that did a lot of good.
You said glood.
Yeah, that did a lot of glood. We'll be right back here on the world... I know what I said, bud. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show News and Information Hour.
Phil Hendry. Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Here we are on the shores of El Pacifico. If you're watching our video cast, which you can watch every night at Phil TV at philhendryshow.com, you watch Phil TV in HD. There we are, right at the shore of the beautiful El Pacifico there, the Twilight Shore, the beautiful red sky.
Yeah, smog does that.
Well, I mean.
Yeah, ain't the smog?
Yeah, the smog makes some of the red sky. Yeah, we got a nice red sunset here in California, or at least in the L.A. area, because of the smog, as you just heard these two guys say. But every now and again, it's just a nice red sky because it's just a nice red sky.
What's that thing about a red sky at a night?
Red sky at night, sailor delight. Red sky in morning, sailor take warning.
What's that mean?
Well, what do you think it means?
What do you think it means, you dumbass? It means, hey,
you going to start it off? All right. One more and you're fired. Both of you. You understand?
Fired?
Yes, fired. Starting the hour off with a fist fight? Don't call him a dumbass. Are you kidding me? That's the pot calling the kettle black.
I'm not calling him black. Even though he is.
Watch it. I'm telling you, bud. In any event, red sky at night, sailors... It's an old saying. It says if there's a red sky at night, it means the weather's going to be nice. That's what it means. And if there's a red sky in the morning, sailor take warning, mean the weather's going to be kind of bad.
On the ocean.
I guess, on the ocean. Not that I didn't hear that. I mean, when I was growing up, they always said it meant any kind of weather, man, whether you're on the ocean or not. It's horse dung, because I've seen plenty of red skies in the morning, and the day's been fantastic. Although, I don't know. Maybe it started raining the next day. I don't know. Anyway.
So it could be true.
Yeah, I guess it could be true.
What meteorological evidence is there, though?
I don't know. What do you mean? But, oh, look at you guys. All of a sudden, you're, what is this, man? The CNN weather map? God.
I mean, but what evidence does you have?
What evidence does I have, huh?
I mean, if you say red sky in the morning, and you say maybe it doesn't work, then it has to be a meteorological evidence.
I don't know what meteorological evidence. I don't want to talk about it right now. I'm starting the hour, okay? Do you mind? Do you mind?
Yeah, sure. Blow us off if you want to. But you say something that people are going to believe in, and you got the meteorological evidence about it.
People ain't out there, bud, going, oh, my God, Phil just said red sky at night, sailor delight, red sky in the morning. Oh, God, I'm going to live my life by that now. They're not doing that. Trust me, okay?
Well, you, the other one always said that people sometimes are stupid.
I'm not saying they're so stupid. I'm not talking about this, okay? We'll talk about it later.
You always say that and never figure it out.
Oh, bud, give me a break. I'm not talking about red sky anymore. What meteorological evidence? Here's something that's really bugging me. Just shut up, because this is bothering me. This kind of thing bothers me a lot. It bothers me. It bothered me when Bush was the president. It bothers me when Obama's the president. It just bugs the hell out of me. And that's when soldiers are yapping, giving their opinion about stuff. And I just don't think it should be allowed. And there is a Pentagon directive that has been in force since the Civil War. It's not the same directive, but the military has limited the free speech of service members since the Civil War. Now, why do you suppose that was? Because the Civil War probably gave rise to a lot of guys in uniform mouthing off their opinion while they were in service, affecting the morale of the soldiers around them, and it became a problem. And so the military, following the Civil War, decided that the free speech of service members, guess what? It gets limited. No, you do not have a right to publicly, and when we say publicly now, this is what we're saying. When you're talking to more than one person, when you're talking to a group, the Pentagon directive on the speech of service members is as follows. Military personnel in uniform cannot sponsor a political club. They cannot participate in any TV or radio program or group discussion that advocates for or against a political party, a candidate, or a cause, or speak at any event promoting a political movement.
What about the ones that put the flag up? Yeah, that's a good point.
What ones that put the flag up?
The Marines.
The Iwo Jima Memorial?
Yeah, they use them.
Those guys are dead and buried. I don't know, man, okay? I don't know. Have you seen that in a political ad?
I think I saw it on a Obama one, or maybe I've seen one on Bush. I'm not sure.
You saw one on Obama?
I said Obama.
No, you didn't. I don't know. I wouldn't do it. I would think that would violate the rule. After you're taking a hallowed military, that's a hallowed symbol of not only the Marines, but of the U.S., of the United States in war. And I don't think you could use that. No. What do you mean you've seen that? I ain't ever seen that anywhere.
What about the flag?
Hey, bud, the flag ain't a guy, is it? It's a flag.
Yeah, okay.
Moving along, Pentagon says military personnel in uniform cannot sponsor a political club. What are you pointing at?
Right here. If you look at this, chapter 2. Give me that.
I can read. I'm reading it. Participate in any TV or radio program or group discussion that what is this on the paper?
So I was wiping my nose. You get. Here's a copy.
Don't wipe your nose. You, man, there's more wrong with you than I suspected. I mean, I knew there was something wrong with you. I knew all along there was something wrong with you. I didn't think there was that much wrong with you.
Why? What's the problem?
Wiping your nose on the news copy? Thank you, Robert, for having. What is that?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's pizza juice.
Give me the other one and wipe it off. One guy, you know, both of you guys you're on the downward slope. You're on the downward slope. I'm telling you that right now. You're on the downward slope.
Is it powdery?
Well, it was about 3 inches. What do you mean, is it powdery? Just get me this copy and don't wipe your nose on it. Pentagon directive says military personnel in uniform cannot sponsor a political club, participate in any TV or radio program. Is it powdery? Or group discussion that advocates for or against a political party, candidate, or cause, or speak at any event promoting a political movement. Okay? Commissioned officers may not use contemptuous words against senior officials. Now, this is in a story covering a sergeant who is going to be discharged for criticizing President Barack Obama on Facebook in a case that called into question the Pentagon's policies about social media and its limits on speech of active duty military personnel. This guy's name is Sergeant Gary Stein. He will get an other than honorable discharge, lose most of his benefits for violating the policies. The San Diego area Marine has served 9 years in the Corps. He said he was disappointed by the decision. He argued he was exercising his constitutional rights to free speech. This guy must be really stupid. And I'll tell you why. I know that he says, I love the Corps, I love my job, I wish it wouldn't have gone this way. I'm having a hard time seeing how 15 words on Facebook could have ruined a 9-year career. I'll tell you how, pal. You know that there was a prohibition against this. You knew it going in. You did it on purpose. You did it to test the rule. The ACLU is coming in on board to help you out. I'd feel this way if you'd said it about President Bush. I feel this way having said it about President Obama. You knew you broke the rule on purpose to test the viability of the free speech of service members, and I hope your ass is out of the Corps for good. You know, if you start letting these guys, this guy at Fort Hood is an example. Now, I'm told by people who may know better than me, well, the guy at Fort Hood, Phil, wasn't speaking to a group of people. He wasn't speaking to a large mass of people. He was giving one-on-one counseling, and that's true. The guy at Fort Hood, that psychiatrist that wound up murdering those soldiers, who was a radical Islamist, had well-known views opposed to the war in Iraq, well-known views opposed to American military, the use of military around the world, well-known views on the United States, negative views on the United States and its relations with Israel. Now, this cat was just walking around there telling people what he thought. And I remember thinking, where does that guy get his pair, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, you said a guy can say what he wants to if he'd only say to one guy.
Yeah, but see, here's the thing. If you're a psychiatrist or a counselor of any capacity like that, you're effectively talking to a lot of people, man. You have access to just about every soldier on the base. They're coming to you for advice. They're coming to you for, who knows, antidepressants to be evaluated. You're talking to a lot of people. You may be talking to them one-on-one, but your opinions are heard by them, and they go out into the base, and everybody hears them. I can't believe, and I'll tell you something right now. Had they enforced the same kind of restriction on that creep that they enforce on the rest of these soldiers, he wouldn't have had the opportunity to kill the men and women that he did, and he would his ass would be out of the Army. But he gets to sit there in his office as the Army psychiatrist, blah, 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 all this stuff that he thinks. Who cares what you think, man? You're in the Army.
Yeah, you're in the Army now. You're not on a plow.
Yeah. Whatever. And you're not on a plow, huh?
What is it?
Behind a plow. In any event, so this guy is saying whatever he wants to say, however he wants to say it, and whenever he wants to say it, and hey, what the hell? Might as well pick up a gun and go do some chopping. This guy, this Gary Stein Marine, has got an attorney who said he would pursue administrative appeals within the Marine Corps, but anticipates the effort will fail. He said he planned to file an amended complaint in federal court. As long as he wants to pursue this, we will be supporting him, said this guy, his attorney, Gary Creep.
Are you kidding me, man?
No. Good name. I'm not knocking the guy. He's a lawyer. He's, you know, he's taking up the case of this man. But you're not going to get me to buy that this guy didn't know what he was doing. He knew exactly what he was doing.
Well, why would he do it then?
Because he wants to test the limits of speech. This guy's talking about a 9-year career getting thrown down the rat hole. He's the guy that did it. He's the guy that, don't give me this 9 words on Facebook. You know what the rule says? You don't criticize. You do not. And that's about as public as it gets, the damn Facebook, man.
called, well, you know, yeah.
What?
It ain't called the Facebook.
Well, it used to be. All right, we're going to come back here on a world-famous Phil Henry show with other exciting news. And I don't want to hear any Iron Swine today, okay? You guys are on probation. Iron Swine's on probation.
What?
Exactly. More on the GOP firing back on Obama, and some cat attacks a guy because he was mad about the Trayvon Martin case. Just all kinds of insightful and weird news coming up here. World-famous Phil Henry show. It's Saturday morning. So,
truth is our bitch. The
right.
Phil Henry Show. For all things news and talk radio, visit trncentral.com.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. What are you going to do, man, if your wife runs off with a lead guitar player in a big and internationally renowned and long-standing rock band? What are you going to do? Right? And you know that this guy, Salahi, you remember that couple that crashed the White House thing?
Yeah, I remember I told you that lady, she was more about than he was.
What do you mean?
Well, she was like dragging him. He wanted to keep going to party. She stopped and dragged him back. They had a spotlight.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I remember seeing that.
Yeah, remember how she stopped him?
Yeah, they were on their way in, and she stopped, and she walked back to the cameras and the light. I remember that. Well, I don't think that she's... I don't think she's any more of a spotlight hog than him. I mean, that guy, he's... There's something weird about both of them. But if you hadn't heard, and I hadn't heard, last September... They went to Seattle, this guy, Tarek Salahi, and his wife, Michelle, the ones that were at the Obama, you know, at the state dinner that they crashed. They went to see Journey. She went backstage, and that's the last he saw her, man. And he thought that she was kidnapped or something.
Yeah, he went on TV and said, please give my wife back. I don't know what happened. I think Journey kidnapped her. What, are you kidding me? Yeah.
I think Journey kidnapped her. Well, anyway, that is kind of funny. Well, they didn't kidnap her. She was a willing, she willingly split and willingly joined up with Neil Schon, the lead guitar player with Journey. Now, as of February, the band Journey gave fans a Valentine's Day present by releasing the video of its new single, Resonate. Fans also got more of an eyeful than they likely bargained for as the video mixes performance footage of the band with shots of guitarist Neil Schon and his new girlfriend, Real Housewives of D.C. star Michelle Salahi, walking on a beach hand in hand and making out while rolling in the surf. God, man.
Man, I thought he was going to sell that to the band.
I don't know. I mean, if you're in Journey, so what is our video?
Well, it's just going to be me and Michelle making out.
Yeah, okay. You know, I want no part of that, man.
What are you talking about?
Okay. I don't know. Who's in that band? Is there anybody that's got any juice to tell him that he can't, you know?
What do you mean?
Well, he's like one of the original members of that group. I can't imagine there's too many guys left from that group, you know?
What, like they're dead?
They could be, for all I know. He's probably the senior member now, so whatever he says goes. And if he wants to roll around in the surf with his girlfriend, oh, God. Controversial new Journey video. Anyway... The video will certainly make for more tabloid fodder for the pair. It's showing them... She's kind of... Anyway, the video will certainly make for more tabloid fodder for the pair who sparked controversy last year. We'll show this during the commercial break, folks, the Neil Schon video. Who sparked controversy last year by crashing the Obama dinner. Tarek Salahi has filed a lawsuit against Neil Schon, claiming that the rocker's affair with his wife cost the Salahis an $150,000 payday from the Australia version of Dancing with the Stars. In happier days, Tarek and Michelle had managed to crash a White House state dinner. He further claimed that Schon had tried to humiliate him, emailing pictures of his private parts and taunting him with phone calls saying, I'm effing your wife. Good God!
I don't believe that.
I'm not believing it either. I think it's probably one of those things where the cat's got a lot of money, so go ahead and throw a bunch of outrageous accusations at him and see which one's the guy, you know, see if the guy's going to fight it. Maybe he'll pay you off.
What do you mean?
I don't think there's any proof, in fact, none has been presented, that Neil Schoen sent pictures of this guy of his private parts saying, I'm effing your wife, okay? I think what this guy said was all this outrageous stuff, and it, rather than be dragged into a court of law to say he's lying, that somehow Neil Schoen has so much money, he'll say, what do you want? You want a check? I'll give you a check. Here, here's here, let me pay for your wife. Let me pay for the loss of your wife. Here's some money. All right, now here's the latest news on this guy. So this is what this guy's lived through. Crashes the White House party. Then they try to get on Celebrity Rehab. And then that doesn't work, and they're on some other show. And then she runs off with Neil Schoen. And then this guy is trying to, you know. Now he is running for governor of Virginia. Tariq Salahi, a Virginia vintner.
What's that?
A vintner, he grows wine. I mean, he makes wine.
He's got like a grapes?
Nah, you mean has he got a vineyard? Not necessarily. He's a winemaker. Well, if you're a vintner, maybe you have grapes. Tariq Salahi, a Virginia vintner who achieved notoriety for, you know, all those years that I spent married and hitting those wineries, you'd think I'd know something about wine. I don't know a damn thing about wine, man. I took wine tasting classes.
Well, you're talking about wine tasting class? What's that?
Oh, yeah. You don't know about that?
Yeah, I've seen about it where the guy comes to the table and makes you take a sip out of like a tin cup.
No, he doesn't make you take a sip of anything. That guy is called the sommelier, okay?
The what?
The sommelier. Am I right about that?
Don't look at me.
Anyway, that's the guy that comes to your table, and he's like he's the wine guy for the restaurant, and he's got the little tin cup. It's a thing around his neck, right?
Yeah, it looks like it's a tin cup.
It's a little tin thing, and he'll pour it in there and say, here, do you want to try the whatever the hell it is? So, yeah, I took a wine tasting class, you know, how to swirl it around, how to taste it, what does it look like, what does it do, how does it do, where does it go, how does it look when it comes out the other end, all that stuff. And to be perfectly honest with you, to this day, I could care less. It's just...
Well, you don't like wine.
I like wine if I found the right setting to drink wine. You know, one of the problems in my life is I never have really been relaxed enough. I'll tell you the first time that I ever enjoyed a bottle of wine. The first time in my life that I ever really enjoyed a bottle of wine. When I first was separated, when my marriage was ending. Okay, I'm not going to give you a song. This is not a sad story. This is actually kind of a nice story. So, you know, I'm single for the first time, and this has got nothing to do with the opposite sex, but it has to do with, okay, here comes a Saturday night, and I was really trying to save my money because I didn't really know how much money I had to work with, and I wasn't quite sure what was going to happen, so I was really watching my P's and Q's financially, but on a Saturday night, I couldn't resist. I walked across the street from my little townhouse, and there was a restaurant across the street. And I'll even tell you the name of it. It's in Westlake Village, and I love it. It's a place called Gaietos, or Gaietis.
You mean like the guy that made Pinocchio?
The guy that made Pinocchio? You mean just Geppetto? No, you idiot. I said Gaietto. And I would sit down and have dinner at the bar, and I would order a bottle of wine. And it would have to be some good wine, and I would talk to the guy and, you know, what's this, what's that, and they would recommend wine. And I'd sit down and have a bottle of wine with dinner. That was the first time in my life that I actually enjoyed wine, and God, did I get drunk.
Yeah, good thing you're just walking.
That's exactly right. Just walk right across the street and then pass out in my garage where my car was. All right, we'll be right back. I'd sleep in my car, in fact. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
Phil is the number here on the world famous Phil Hendry Show. Margaret Gray has just checked in, and who do we have?
Yeah, well, Herb Sewell too.
And Herb Sewell, Margaret, how you doing?
I'm doing very good. I heard you talking about the Reds, and I didn't. I don't know if you mentioned the Rosé of Cabernet. And Frank and I...
The Rosé of Cabernet.
Yes, but you were talking about the Reds.
Well, let's be clear, because there's people who are not wine drinkers. The red, meaning a red grape, red wine?
Yes, I'm talking about the red wines. Frank and I are just about ready to board a plane. We're flying to Hawaii tonight. Frank's brother's great niece is getting married, and we just found out about this, didn't we? So this is kind of exciting. We're on our way over to Kauai. But I wanted to get on the phone with you and tell you, if you want a really good red wine, okay, Frank knows a couple, and they took over a place called the Barn, or the Red Barn. What's it called?
Frank, let me have it. Hey, young man, it's Frank.
Hey, Frank, how you doing?
I'm better than Custer, young man. It's a place called the Old Red... It's a place called the Red... It's a Red Barn. I know that, right?
The Red Barn. It's up there,
Don't grab the phone up.
Well, it's up near the place where Phil goes, the Allison Ranch.
Oh, what's the name of the town? It's the, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, they've got a vine ripened. It's a vine place. What do you call it?
It's called a vintner.
What?
Vintner. God almighty.
Yeah, they've got a vintner. And it's called the Barn, the thing, it's got a name like that, Bill, okay?
The Old Red Barn.
No, not the Old Red Barn. It's a red barn, and it's called, it's very rustic. It has a rustic name, like the Burned Out Hole, or you wouldn't expect it.
Yeah, it's a name you wouldn't expect, Bill. It's not very, it's a very dramatic name. It's a great winery, but the name's very dramatic. It's like something.
It's like the Burned Out Home, or the, God, what is the name of it? It's almost why I think they call it, what was the family that got slaughtered in Kansas?
Oh, yeah, the Clutters.
Yeah, it's like they called it Clutter House or something, on purpose. And,
What are you people telling me now? Because now I'm getting really weirded out.
What did you want?
You're going to have to take the phone.
What's the problem?
What are you talking about?
I'm telling you about one of the best reds I've ever had in my life. Is that a bad thing? And
there's nothing wrong with it, Margaret, but I don't know what you're talking. You're saying to me, the Burned Out Old Red, the Clutter House.
Because they named it after the family. It's very tragic. I agree. But who is the book that Truman wrote? Do you remember the big book that Truman wrote?
Oh, Truman. Well, no, I'm not on a first-name basis.
Oh, God, grow up, Phil. What was it?
The old Dead of Night.
In the cold of night?
In cold blood.
That's it. The family that got slaughtered, they used their name for the winery. Why? Because they wanted something very rustic and old, you know?
So they take the name of a family that was murdered in cold blood in Kansas in the 50s because they want a rustic name.
Yes, I don't... What's the problem?
Right on principle alone, I'm not going to buy any wine from these people.
Oh, my God, Frank.
What's the problem now?
I'm not buying any wine from a winery that they named after a family that got murdered.
Oh, get off your high horse, Way. It's fantastic. I know the couple. They're great people. He is a seamstress, and she runs an insurance agency.
Okay, so that means she's a seamstress, and he runs an insurance agency.
And they've got this wonderful winery. And I'll tell you, you've never had a better red. It's called Slaughterhouse. What is it?
It's the Slaughter... No, not Slaughterhouse. Clutter Slaughterhouse.
The Clutter Slaughterhouse.
I'm not buying any wine from them, Frank. Thank you very much.
Why not?
Because the name disgusts me.
This is a very prominent friend of mine. She's an attorney. She's now running an insurance agency. And his wife, he is a seamstress, and he makes dresses, but the two of them run this vintner, and I'm telling you, the red wine alone will set you free. You'll have visions. You'll have visions. Margaret, am I right?
You really will. You'll see things, Phil. I never thought that I would have the real native, and you know that I've been traveling my life. I've been on a road, and I've been on a path, and for the people listening, Phil knows this about me. I've been on a path to have a truly Native American vision. It's been my path. It's been my karma. Although that's not really a Native Indian thing, is it?
No, that karma is more Buddhist and Hindu.
Yeah. Hindu's Indian. But I've been on a path to be Native. And this marvelous Rosé of Cabernet, I think I saw almost like a witchy woman coming at me in a... You know, Frank,
I remember that night. Yeah, the witchy woman came at him, and he told him to, what is it that he...
The witchy woman to her, and she said to me, you will have many children. And, of course, I'm 58, and I've only got one. So I thought, well, is she talking about pets? So Frank and I are looking to adopt cats.
Okay,
Oh, okay, so that... I just heard what you did there, and that's you saying, aren't you too embarrassing? You're a couple of horses' asses. Isn't that what you said?
No, I didn't say that, but you know what? Thank you very much for helping me find the words.
What? Did you hear...
You're talking to the woman I love. He's made me very happy, and for you to say that to him...
Yeah, okay, Frank.
Well, what do you mean, yeah, okay, Frank? He's made me very happy. Now, why are you saying that about the woman I love? Hello?
Put him on hold. Man, you didn't talk to Frank Ray. He's one of the most powerful people in Hollywood. I don't care anymore.
He's going to be able to do something.
Oh, what's he going to do? If I got to talk to those two fruitcakes any more tonight, I'm going to lose it. I'm telling you right now, in the words of Ashton Kutcher, I'm going to lose it. What is up with them, man? The Vintner up in, and I can't even remember the name of the town that I used to go to at Christmas time up there, which the Dutch town. What the hell's the name of that town?
I don't know.
So they say there's a winery just outside of it. It's called Solvang. That's the name of the town. So they said there's a winery just outside of Solvang that they wanted a real rustic name for it, so they named it after the house that the people got murdered in.
Which ones?
The people in Cold Blood. And they want it nice and rustic, and I'm supposed to go there and buy a bottle of rosé, a Cabernet that gave Margaret Native American visions. No chance, man. No way.
Yeah, but you ran that guy down. That guy's a friend of Mr. Gray.
Hey, you know something, Robert? You can call him up and smooth it over, okay? You want to kiss his ass so much?
I don't want to kiss his ass. I'm just saying a man's got a lot of juice.
He may have a lot of juice, okay? But guess what? He ain't got nothing I want.
Are you nuts or something? That guy used to produce TV shows and everything. He could just like that, stab of his finger, put the kibosh on it.
Put the kibosh on what?
Your burgeoning TV career.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure. My burgeoning TV career. Let me tell you something, man. If he wants to put the kibosh on it, go right ahead, Frank. But you're not going to get me to buy a bottle of wine from a couple of yuppie jackasses that you know who decided to throw it all away. Let's go buy a winery.
You think that's it, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I, you know how many times I've been to places like that? Oh, you know, we just bought a winery, and we're this, and we're that, and we're something else. And the next thing you know, 2 years later, they freaking sold it. They got a divorce. They did something. It's gone to seed. They sold it commercially. They made their money. They got out. Who knows? I don't like wine that much. And I'm telling you right now, anybody that's trying to... What did they name that place? The old burned-out Hulk? I mean, what the hell is that? How would I want to go buy a bottle of wine from... Some people just got no, and I'm telling you, no taste. They have no panache. They have no sense of propriety, perspective, the public, commercial instinct, nothing. Having said that, who farted? Nobody saying? Okay. Got a couple of seconds here just before the break. So why the hell am I... Oh, that's because we were talking about this slob, this Salahi. I thought Margaret was going to call up and say the guy's a friend of hers. This guy's running for governor. Now, this jackass is running for governor. On top of the fact that his wife ran off with Neil Sean of Journey... On top of the fact that he has been sued now by someone alleging that Salahi's so-called Journey for the Cure Foundation, a nonprofit organization, has made false statements, submitted inaccurate financial statements, and has solicited donations without being registered with the state. This is Virginia. He's got another complaint alleging that his company's violated the Virginia Consumer Protection Act. He's got all kinds of stuff going on, and now he wants to run for governor. What are the chances that this guy has got a brain tumor, you know?
Why do you say that?
You got to have a brain tumor, man, if you think that you are going to run for governor and have any kind of success at all while all this stuff is happening to you. It must be one of these cats, you know, some people, when they feel themselves sinking, they just keep on dog paddling faster. You know, that's what he's doing. He's just, you know.
Well, I mean, what are you going to do, man? If all you know how to do is shuck and jive people.
Well, that's a good point. If all I knew how to do was shuck and jive, I guess I'd just keep on shucking and jiving. But if I were this guy, I would just kind of cut my losses here, man. It's like, you know, there's got to be something this cat knows how to do. Has he been trained at anything? Didn't I read this guy's a lawyer or something? Do something, man, but get yourself out of the newspapers. Settle all this crap with the state of Virginia. Your wife's, write that broad off. Goodbye. Thank you. We had a great time. Have fun with the guitar player. He'll dump your ass in another year or so.
Yeah, I don't know, man. He may marry her. She may become like Yoko McCartney or whatever that lady's name was.
Yoko McCartney, huh?
No, Yoko Ono.
You know, it's a hell of a thing for you to be thinking about Linda McCartney in the same breath with this.
What about Yoko Ono?
Her, too. All right, folks. So that's all I got there, man. The CDC has cleared a Delta flight. You might be happy to know a Delta flight from Detroit after a suspected case of monkeypox was ruled out. All right.
What monkeypox? Something monkeys get.
I guess so. And a little more news from Bobby Brown's end of the planet, man. No more jail time for him. Good God. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. For more information on this and other great talk programs, go to talkradionetwork.com.
All right, so I should tell you about this monkeypox. Whatever the hell that is. What's monkeypox, man? I don't know. Did I just do something to the camera?
Yeah, you pushed the button or something.
Sorry. There we go. Anyway, here it is. Passengers aboard Delta Flight 3163 were quarantined on the plane. Which has been grounded for more than 2 hours at Chicago Midway Airport, officials confirmed this evening. And this evening was... When was this, man?
About like 2 days ago.
2 days ago? Good Lord. Well, anyway, let me just give you the story here. It was actually Thursday night. The CDC said it had received a report one of the passengers who's been in Africa may have gotten a case of monkeypox.
How'd he get that?
What, are you about to ask because only monkeys get monkeypox?
Well, it stands to reason.
What about chickenpox? Who gets that?
I guess people.
Yeah, people.
Oh, people. You mean not just chickens?
All right. Point well taken.
Yeah, okay. Thank you, D'Artagnan.
Who's he?
Never mind, bud. The CDC said it received a report that one of the passengers who's been in Africa may have gotten a case of monkeypox. It's a rare viral disease that occurs mostly in Africa. The CDC said the passenger's family member, who was concerned by a rash, reported it. Now, the rash was on the guy's, you know what. And
his mom saw it.
And his mom saw it.
Are you guys kidding?
Yes, we're kidding. Who was concerned about... Anyway, a review by the CDC and the Chicago Department of Public Health officials concluded it does not appear that the signs and symptoms are consistent with a monkeypox infection, but how would we know we're in Chicago? Medical professionals suggested the ill passenger seek medical care. Well, there you go. And the passenger was released out into the day, out into the teeming masses of Chicago. Have a very nice day as he stumbled, spitting up out onto the curb with children, nuns, wives, husbands, and the mass of humanity.
Just like that movie, The Stand.
Right. Or what was that other really crap can flick we saw that night? God, did that thing suck.
Yeah, the one with Morgan Freeman and Dustin Hoffman.
Yo, God. What was the name of that, man?
It was called Flu.
Yeah, Flu.
Flu? What do you mean, Flu?
Yeah, that was what it was called. It was like, he was killing everybody.
Flu. That was the name of the movie, huh? Flu? Why didn't they just call it Sniffles?
Well, yeah, it was a real scary name. When Morgan Freeman played the head of the CDC, right?
Yeah, and it had a scary name, and Flu don't scare me.
Why? That doesn't scare you. It put you in a hospital.
Swine flu put me in a hospital, and I know it wasn't called swine flu. It was called something like
What do you call the first one? Sniffles?
It wasn't sniffles, okay?
Well, what was it?
It was virus or, like, you know, something heavy, you know, like epidemic, you know, but it wasn't that big of a name. It was like plague, you know?
Nah, that wasn't it.
Well, what do you think it was? Like,
I think it was, like, rash. Wasn't that it?
Sure, yeah. See the way he did that?
God, bud, that ain't scary. That what if it's monkeypox?
I'm sure. Rash.
What are you laughing about?
Outbreak. Thank you, Dan. Outbreak.
What?
That's the name of the movie.
No way. No way. No way. No.
Yes, it was, because Dan just looked it up while you two jackballs were jawjacking this thing half to death. Rash. God.
Outbreak? That don't scare me at all.
It scares the hell out of me. If the guy came knocking on my door, some health department cat, and he goes, there's been an outbreak of, you know...
pimples.
You know, bud, you can joke all you want, okay? This is really serious.
Oh, yeah, that movie was real serious.
I'm saying this here, monkeypox, okay? So this guy had a rash on his... okay, anyway, Karen Girth of Burlington, Vermont. What? Oh, this is just a passenger that they contacted. They called her on the cell phone, and she spoke from her cell phone at 6:10 p.m. saying the flight seemed normal. It was a total shock to everyone when they pulled up to the gate, but the pilot would not open the door. He said, "We cannot open the door. Medical personnel are meeting the plane." Then finally, two people from the Chicago Fire Department came on and went to examine a passenger, a woman from Uganda. She was traveling, and they thought she may have been exposed to some kind of a disease.
Man, that is racist. Why? Because just because she's from Uganda, they think she got monkeypox. Well, if you come from Africa, you gotta expect there's probably some jungle rot or something. What do you mean, jungle rot?
Will you guys shut up and talk about it later on? Jungle rot. You know, bud, people do travel from Africa, and they don't have any disease at all. Can you imagine that?
Well.
So anyway, the passenger said that they examined this lady. She was traveling, and they thought maybe she'd been exposed to this monkeypox. She said the others, she said the officers, let me wear my glasses, the officers in hazmat suits took pictures and sent them to the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta. Now they're interviewing some passengers. It sounds as if the woman does not have the disease. She had a rash, but don't we all?
Right.
Anyway, Tom Smith of Beverly Hills said that his wife Miriam is on the plane. That's nice. Whatever. Who's Tom Smith of Beverly Hills? And how did this writer, Ellen Krieger of the Detroit Free Press, talk to him?
Maybe she knows him. Maybe she was at his house.
Yeah, Ellen, you got a lot of explaining to do to Tom Smith's wife, Miriam. They think someone's carrying a disease who came from Atlanta. You can almost hear the panic in the way that this guy's... They think someone's carrying a disease. He came from Atlanta and boarded the flight to Detroit. Who talked with his wife on her cell phone and said, honey, you're not rushing, are you? No, okay. And then he got Ellen out of the house. The flight was flown by Calm Air, doing business as Delta Connection, flying a Canadair, whatever, regional jet, which can have between 50 and 78 seats. God, I hate those little tiny planes when they're packed, man.
Yeah, everybody breathing on them, all kind of stuff. Breathing all that clam sauce.
You got that right. You get on one of those little tiny props, or even a jet, and it's crowded. Oh man! Although the one going from Minneapolis to Green Bay for the Packer game, that was fun, and that was a jet, and that was, I can't tell you how much fun we had on that flight. World famous Phil Henry Show is produced by Dan Northcraft and Phil Henry. Don't forget our website, philhenryshow.com. Visit us over there. Get yourself a backstage pass. Quit screwing around. You can watch live streaming video of our show each and every night. Access all the archives and podcasts of this show. Will be up and raring to go, baby, tomorrow. And, of course, our video cast as well. And don't forget, we have a free podcast that will be available here in a week or two. And other exciting stuff to tell you, including a new item in our souvenir shop. So please do join us for all of that. And until Monday night at 10, let that be a lesson to you.
Phil Henry.